Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always. But you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon is easy. All you have to do is go to ESOpodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleese Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 148 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Action Comics number 1010, Detective Comics number 1002, Heroes in Crisis number 8, Justice League Dark number 10, The Terrifics number 15, Wonder Woman number 69, Supergirl season 4 episode 19, American Dreamer, Arrow season 7 episode 20, Confessions, Legends Tomorrow season 4 episode 13, Egg McGuffin, Flash, Season 5, Episode 20, Gone Rogue, and Doom Patrol, Season 1, Episode 12, Cyborg Patrol. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. A new Batman-Superman ongoing is going to launch this August to fight a new version of the Secret Six led by the Batman Who Laughs. This new volume of Batman-Superman will be written by Joshua Williamson and drawn by former Marvel exclusive artist David Marquez. The Batman Who Laughs has been working on this massive plan since Metal. He has sleeper agents throughout the DC universe, and they've been infected, and they're slowly turning into the worst versions of themselves. And some of them know they're changing, and some don't. Now, Cletus, did you read the Batman Who Laughs miniseries?
I did not.
I did not either, so I didn't know any of that was going on. This sounds intriguing, but I know who the writer is, and I'm really not that excited about it.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
So, I mean, we'll probably at least review the first issue, maybe see how it is, but I'm not expecting much out of this.
I gotta agree, it could be good,
but track record tells me it's not gonna be. All right, well, let's move on to our last bit of news for this week. We had Free Comic Book Day this past Saturday, and were you able to make it there, Cletus?
I was not. I was working at my weekend job, unfortunately, so I didn't make it this year, which is a bummer. Usually I try. That's one of the things I try to do, is to get out there in time for it, but I did not this year.
So the boys and I went, and I was kind of disappointed in what DC had to offer, because it wasn't much. I basically got two items. One was called Dear Justice League, and it's basically this little ash can with a couple stories. And I mean, the stories were really good, geared for kids. They're basically kids riding into the Justice League. And the first story was really good, with this kid basically wrote into Superman asking him if he ever had a bad day. And yep, Superman has a bad day. So he basically runs into a building while he's texting. And what's funny, he runs into the building. There's some window washers on the other side of the building that fall off. He saves them, but a bucket falls and almost lands on this lady. She misses it, but bumps into somebody else. And it's just one of those comics where one bump causes this big catastrophe. So it was kind of funny. I did not get a chance to there's a Hawk Girl one in here. I did not get a chance to read that one. Was there just two of them in here? It might have just been the two. I did not get the chance to read the second one, so I don't know how that one was. Then the other thing DC had was called Under the Moon, a Catwoman Tale. And it looks like it was a preview of the book they were putting out, which ironically I put on the shelf today at the bookstore. So, but that was all DC had.
They haven't really done a whole lot in recent years. I remember 4 or 5 years ago, Marvel and DC both, I thought, and especially DC, tended to put out a really nice free comic book day book. And more recently, I feel like both have almost forgotten about the day, or just really not bothered to do much for it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It hasn't been that spectacular these last few years. So, yeah, on the Marvel side, I also picked up Spider-Man. And I haven't really looked through that. I haven't had time to look through that too much either. But it looked like it has Peter and Miles Morales on the cover. And I don't know if this is Carnage or Venom. It looks kind of like Carnage to me. But, you know, it's kind of darkened, so I wasn't able to tell, really. Spider-Man versus Spider-Man. The gloves are off. Eh, whatever. So, that's all I picked up from Free Comic Book Day. I didn't grab anything else. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
The PWR Spot Show is on the air every single week for your wrestling listening pleasure. We talk about professional wrestling. None of that fake stuff here, just Hulk Hogan, pile drivers, and cage matches. So join us at the ProWrestlingRoundtable.com or on ESONetwork.com.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you. We got spoilers,
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 spoilers.
We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you,
for you.
All right, let's talk Action Comics number 1010. So, this issue opens up with the DEO director Bones being interviewed by Kate Spencer, who supposedly has come to be his lawyer. Director Bones figures out quickly that she is not the real Kate Spencer and calls her bluff. He claims that she is the architect of a real royal flush. And the next thing we see is her leaving, claiming Director Bones is having a heart attack. So apparently she did something to him. We also see Superman and Lois go undercover as Spiral agents, meeting up with Tiger. The mysterious creature that had been destroying things shows up, and Superman goes after it. We see some blue energy storm thing happen, and then Superman's like glowing for the rest of the issue. When he returns back, both Lois and Tiger are gone.
But Superman seems to have figured it out, and then Jimmy seemed to have figured something out too earlier. I thought that scene was odd. The way Jimmy was like, yeah, I figured out what your plan is, Amanda. But like so casually and continue to take pictures of her. I didn't get that.
And pictures that she was not very excited about.
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. But it was odd, like that whole thing. Like it was like, yeah, I believe that Jimmy would figure that out. It was the way that he, like, I feel like Jimmy would maybe not be such an idiot doing it. You know what I mean? Like that was, I just thought that was odd. Because I liked the fact that he kind of seemed to have solved something, but sitting right next to her pointing a camera at her, I don't know. The other thing I thought was odd was that they didn't really do anything with the undercover Superman.
No, they didn't.
You could have just not done it at all and had the same comic.
Yeah.
Which was weird because they even kind of referenced it a little bit. They had that sort of like fake cover like old school Silver Age cover of this adventure that they had gone on previously, and like, oh, that was a fun one, which was kind of funny, but it was also like, well, I kind of want to read that. Like, something similar to that. You tease us that these two are going undercover on this mission, and they do, but they don't really. Yeah. I felt unfulfilled with that.
Yeah, and then we also see Tegger's like, you're Chaz's Superman? Because they didn't really do anything undercover, did they, except meet up with him. They could have met up with him as Superman and Lois.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you could have taken the undercover part of it completely out of the story and told the exact same story. That was why I thought, I was like, Bendis has done this a couple times where I was like, well, then why do it? If you're not going to do anything with it, why do it?
I don't know. It was a pretty good issue.
I am intrigued to see the fulfillment of this plot.
Yeah, and it seems like the Leviathan thing is going to be bigger than just this comic. You get that feeling?
Oh yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, I've been seeing advertisements for stuff that looks like this is going to be bigger. So, it's like starting here, but it's going to be a bigger thing. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Detective Comics number 1002. All right, Cletus, I have some mixed feelings about this issue. On one hand, I like the comedy and interactions from some of my favorite characters like Jim Gordon and Alfred and Damian. On the other hand, I'm still not convinced how I feel about the Arkham Knight. Especially after he unmasked himself to Damian, trying to convince him to join him. Because my fear is it's going to end up being Tim Drake, a future Tim Drake, or a future Damian, or one of the Robins. If that's the case, I'm going to be very pissed, because I do not want to see that story.
Well, I'm wondering if it's going to be Jason, because Jason kind of went away, last I knew, right?
Well, he's still doing things in his Red Hood title, or whatever title he's... Red Hood and the Outlaws, or whatever title he's doing. He's still got his title going on.
For other reasons, he is also the most likely character for that to be, and it would be kind of lame, frankly, if it was him, just because that story's been told. I don't know. I didn't really get anything out of the Arkham Knight in this. I also was not crazy about the artwork. Like, I kind of didn't like the way Batman was drawn, but that's just a personal gripe. It was fine. I thought it was a fine comic, but I'm definitely not, like, I'm not yet sold on the character.
Yeah. Like I said, I had mixed feelings about it, too. And, I mean, I did like some of the things in here, like Jim Gordon telling the Batmobile to take Batman home. I thought that was funny. I don't like the fact that Damian was actually in a Batman story being Robin, you know what I mean? It's like we haven't seen that partnership for a while, even though he went off on his own.
Also, being helpful. Like, not only is he present in the story, but he's actually like a helpful member of the team. And not, like, I feel like they've been making him a little bit more antagonistic recently. So it was nice seeing him just be like a member of the team.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean?
I agree with you there. Do you feel like this is going to wrap up next issue? Because that's what it felt like to me. Like, the story is going to be over already.
I don't think the story will be over, but I think the setup, it will be very clear. I think what the story is about will be very clear next issue. It does feel fast-paced.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. I don't know. Tomasi's just disappointing me with his Detective Comics run so far. And I loved his Superman run. So I'm hoping he gets on track here soon.
Agreed. You know, this hasn't been bad. I haven't disliked this as strongly as I disliked the lead up to 1000. This has just kind of been mediocre.
Exactly.
Kind of forgetful, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
Forgettable, that's what I'm looking for, forgettable.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Heroes in Crisis number 8. All right, Cletus, this issue left me confused. Now, I understand that Wally was able to use his super speed to uncover everyone's identities and learn, you know, the secrets about Sanctuary. And I understand that he went over the edge and kind of killed everybody with his Force Lightning. But the part that confused me is why he traveled back 5 days into the past just to murder everybody and set up Booster and Harley thinking that each other did it. Can you offer any more insight to that? Or did I miss something? Or
he went, so my understanding is he went 5 days into the future to figure out how to remedy the situation. And in the meantime, he needed to buy 5 days, so to speak. Because if he just left the scene as it was, they would have known it was him, and he would not have been able to do anything about it. And so he essentially created the perfect crime that didn't actually happen, framing both Booster and Harley so that they go on, like, everybody goes on a goose chase with them while he has the time to do what he needs to do.
Okay. Okay, I think I understand. You explained it very well. I was confused. So he had his little Force Lightning accident, and then he went into the future to set up the thing and then come back and try to fix it? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, that was my... That's personally what I got out of it, was that he needed to... Because at the end of the comic, he says, I figured out how to... At some level, he figured out how to fix things. So, yeah, I think he figured out some sort of solution. I don't know necessarily that means bringing people back or not, but he figured out something. I don't think it's necessarily going to be a happy ending, but I don't think it's going to be quite the miserable ending that maybe, like, Identity Crisis. I thought when I finished that, I enjoyed that book, but it intentionally leaves you feeling very uncomfortable with the way that ends. You're kind of like, oh, did they kind of won, but did they really win?
Yeah.
I feel like this one's going to be slightly more positive than that. Obviously, you're still not going to feel great about it. But I have a feeling that it's going to have a slightly better payoff.
I hope so, because Wally's in a dark place right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm hoping it plays out better.
Well, one thing I really liked about this was that it wasn't... King didn't just change Wally to suit his story. You know what I mean? The thing I really liked about this twist is that it makes sense within the story that King is told. Wally doesn't just suddenly magically snap and murder people, right?
Right.
He experiences all of the trauma of the entire Earth-based DC universe all at once within a couple of milliseconds. Like, that's... You know what I mean? He says, I only lost control for a second, and that's all it took.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't intend to murder anybody. He just kind of let loose with his Force Lightning, and it just happened to kill people.
That's what I kind of liked. I understand if people don't like that Wally did this, but he didn't, in my opinion, it's not intentional. It's not like Tom King didn't write a story where Wally West became a murderer.
No, it was an accident.
Yeah, and then it's all the steps that go from there. I like the explanation where, like, I spent years with one of the world's greatest detectives. I know how to set up a crime scene, like, all that. Like, I don't know. I really liked this issue because I thought it answered basically every question that you had. Like, how was it that possible that Booster and Harley saw each other kill the other one when neither did? And then all of those. Like, it was... I was a big fan of this issue.
So, I was a little confused, so I'm glad you clarified that. And I'm curious to see how it's going to end now. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Justice League Dark number 10. So, Naboo reveals his plan to the Lords of Order. Let the other kind destroy all magic while they retreat into their amulets and he and him into his helmet. And when all the magic has been consumed by the other kind... and they are starved, the Lords of Order will reappear, and then they'll begin anew. So we got his full plan, finally. On Mira, we see, I always forget how to pronounce his name, Khalid, convinces Blue Demon, Detective Chimp, Swamp Thing, and Man-Bat that Mira needs to be evacuated because we got the Lords of Order who have decided to destroy Mira. And then we see Naboo comes up with an alternative for the magic folk. Instead of them being killed, he gives them the option of being stripped of their magic forever and to live as mortals. So, I thought that was an interesting offer, and I'm wondering if we're going to see anybody take that up.
I don't know. I feel I would believe that we would, but I'm not sure that we'll see that deal fulfilled or not.
Not by any of the major characters, anyways.
Right. Yeah, I could see maybe some minor character getting stripped, but then it would also, like, because, like, if they do all take that deal, there's no book.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I honestly don't know how that interaction is going to play out. I'm assuming a conflict, but they kind of have already stated that they can't win that fight.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, I'm curious to see what happens with that.
All right. We also see Zatanna and Wonder Woman. They've gone to Cersei looking for Mordru, the Lord of Chaos. And they learned that Zatara had foreseen the events that are happening now and had prepared for them. And we see that John Constantine had been left to execute Zatara's plan in his absence. So I thought, you know, I found that interesting also. The other thing we learned that Cersei is working with the other kind.
Sort of. Like half working with them.
Well, yeah. Can't really touch her because she's got the witch mark. Which makes me wonder if they can touch Wonder Woman either because she's got the witch mark.
I don't think she does anymore. If I'm remembering the ending of that correctly, it goes away and Cersei is the sole possessor of that.
Oh, that's right. I think you're right. You are right about that. Okay.
And that nobody else knows that.
I forgot either. About that.
Or at least Justice League Dark doesn't. I mean, rephrase. None of the protagonists of the story know that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. So, I thought this was a really good issue. And
This has been a very good run. It's been a great story. I'm been impressed with how they've managed to draw the stakes out with this. Because oftentimes with comics, it's really easy to just write, you know, like a short six-issue arc, which is great. I mean, that's kind of how they work. But they've really drawn out the other kind for multiple issues, and it doesn't feel old. It doesn't feel stale. It feels like the story is still progressing naturally.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So, I'm, you know, I've been happy with the title so far. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week, The Terrifics number 15. So, The Terrifics opens up with Michael and Paula having a dinner date. And let's remember, Michael and Paula are from two different dimensions. You know, Michael's Paula has passed away, and Paula's Michael has passed away. So, we got them trying to date here. The date gets interrupted by two T-spears that inform Mr. Terrific that a giant snake is attacking at Stag Industries. And when the snake is destroyed, a cyberwoman appears and gives them a warning. Let go or suffer. Now, I want to ask you a question, Cletus. Did you feel like that cyberwoman, or at least to me, that cyberwoman reminded me of Silver Surfer?
Absolutely. And then when you get to the end of the comic, this is clearly their version of the coming of Galactus. It's awesome. I'm very excited by that. Because that was the big, like, kind of, I don't know, like, old wives' tale. I don't know if it's necessarily true or not, but the story with the creation of Galactus was Stan Lee telling Jack Kirby, the Fantastic Four fight God. And that ultimately became Galactus. And then this one, you see at the end of the issue, they're like, I think we're fighting God. And before that, you have some sort of herald. This is clearly the Terrifics version of Galactus. Obviously, it's going to be slightly different, but still, we already got Doctor Doom. now we're getting Galactus.
Okay, I was wondering if you felt the same thing too, because that's what I felt too. And I was like, oh man, I was like, when I, you know, I got through that first little scene with the Cyberwoman, I'm like, man, she reminds me an awful lot of Silver Surfer. And I was kind of excited to talk to you about that and see what you thought. Well, we're on the same page, apparently.
Yep.
So, yeah, I like how they're using the plagues of Egypt in this story too. Oh man, I tell you, I had to laugh when Michael and Paula are having their little romantic moment, and Phantom Girl's like, "Come on, let's get out of here." And then she goes to Plastic Man. "Wait a minute, where's your bottom half?" "Oh, well, you know what? You know what's going on with the bathrooms here." "My other half is in the strip mall across the street." I'm like, so you're on the John stretching clear across and having a conversation with Phantom Girl? Man, I just died laughing. I thought that was freaking hilarious.
I would absolutely believe the Plastic Man of all characters would do that.
Of course he would. Oh man, that's why I love Plastic Man too. I noticed some of the, you know, like Plastic Man's son was absent from this issue and stuff, but I mean, not a big deal. I really love this issue.
I'm very excited for this next story arc. I understand it's not going to be exactly the same as Galactus, and that's great because I don't want like exactly Silver Surfer and Galactus, but the fact that they are still like not shying away from the fact that they're basically the DC version of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I love this title. And we got a Terrifics graphic novel in the bookstore tonight, too. I put that on the shelf. I was like, ooh, the Terrifics. I'm thinking about putting that out as my pick. But, yeah, I'm really loving the Terrifics. It's one of my favorite titles. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Wonder Woman number 69. I have to tell you, Cletus, I found it ironic that the issue number was 69 and this issue was about lust.
Do you think that was a coincidence? I kind of don't think it was.
So we had the Cupids show up in Summer Grove, Connecticut, and all of the townspeople have lost their moral inhibitions. They're all frolicking around half naked just in the streets of their town. And I found this very hilarious. When Wonder Woman shows up, she's like, "By Hera's womb." When the team gets attacked by the Cupids, I found that very hilarious. So Aphrodite tries to take control of her Cupids, since they are her subjects, but the creatures seem to be answering to a higher power, and we find out that's Aphrodite's daughter, Antelitides. I couldn't pronounce that very well. But I was wondering who this Greek goddess was, because I wasn't familiar with her. And she has a more common name called Hermaphroditus, which is the god of lust and unions. So, you know, this is what I found out about this character. She's supposed to have both female and male sexual organs. And Hermaphroditus is the child of Aphrodite, the goddess of love, of course, and Hermes, the messenger of the gods. And some of her abilities are supposed to be mind control and pathokinesis, which is the power to manipulate and enhance the emotions of people, particularly lust, where they can rip down a person's moral boundaries, which allows them to act on any desire they choose, which is basically what we saw going on in the issue. I really like this issue a lot. It was funny, it was interesting, and I'm wondering what's going to happen next issue.
I'm very much enjoying this run on Wonder Woman, just because it's really tapping into the Greek mythology side of Wonder Woman, which I don't need all the time, but they're making really good use of it. And really is keeping the story very intriguing to me.
Yeah, it is. So it's. I think it's been better than most of the Wonder Woman stories we've read since Rebirth, in my opinion.
I would agree with that.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the Roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant Dickery? Redonkulous? let's not go with Shrink. That you know. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic. Stay on topic.
Topic.
Red leader, I'm no, I'm sorry.
Stay on topic.
I can't shake it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The Roundtable, brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 4, Episode 19, American Dreamer. So this episode opens up with the Children of Liberty arresting an alien. We see Ben Lockwood is trying to teach his son a lesson, but his son expresses his uncertainty about their actions. Lockwood responds with, "We can't humanize them, son. Don't ever mistake them for anything but the roaches they are." Later in the episode, we see his son question his mother about rounding up the aliens, but she defends her husband's actions. When the Children of Liberty invade the bar at the end of the episode, their son sees what's happening to a friend of his and makes a decision that he does not like what the Children of Liberty are doing. I have a feeling their son is going to make some sort of move against them at the end of the season. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's going to be Ben at some point is going to have to basically have to shoot through his son in order to accomplish his goal, is what I expect to happen.
Yep. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, it was interesting is because we've kind of seen, it's not like they've pulled this son story out of nowhere. We've kind of seen him get slowly indoctrinated by his dad. And yet it's kind of interesting seeing that view get shattered. It's a cool story. I also, this episode in particular, I remember a few podcasts ago, as much as I liked the Lex story, I questioned why they were doing it this season when they had such a good villain with Lockwood. And we've kind of realized the answer to that, and that's because they don't have enough episodes with Lex to make him a full season villain. And so it kind of works. I kind of get what they're doing now, because they want to use Lex. Obviously, it's Lex Luthor. But you have this great villain, and so when Lex goes away, because they can only use him one more time, which is stupid, they have this other great villain still that they can fall back on.
Yeah, and as we see in this episode, he's doing a great job of being a villain.
Yeah, to say the least.
The other thing that was cool about this episode is we finally got to see Dreamer in action tonight. I mean, we've seen her in action before, but not like this. She seemed a lot more powerful. Of course, we got the overdramatic American Woman song sequence, but I still liked it. So I thought it was cool to see Dreamer doing a lot more in this episode.
I totally agree. Her powers have improved significantly. They were very cool, though. Very cool stuff. I got to say, though, one thing that kind of occurred to me, I don't know if it occurred to you, seeing her use those powers, they could totally do a Green Lantern, is all I'm saying. Because her powers were very similar to what you'd see with in terms of green energy. I'm not comparing her to Green Lantern, but the way that they animated her powers. You know what I'm saying? The way she was making those whips and stuff?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm just throwing it out there. Yes.
Give us Green Lantern already.
Yeah, no kidding. I know the CGI might be a little expensive, but come on, people. Since her decision to keep Supergirl laying low, Kara is on a quest to bring down Lex through her journalistic expose. We see that she tries to link Ameritech to Lex Luthor, and after finding some evidence that leads her to Lena, we have some drama between the two before they decide to work together at the end of the episode. So it's kind of cool to see Kara using her reporter skills more than being Supergirl. I know I like seeing her as Supergirl, but they kind of got away from her being a reporter last season, and I'm glad they're doing a lot more reporter stuff this season.
I do like the fact that they're focusing on her being a reporter. I do sometimes feel like they overblow the importance that a singular journalist can have. You know what I mean? Like,
I know what you mean.
I understand that there are examples of that, but overall, I mean, I don't know. They really are like, they're basically like, yeah, Kara, if she just writes this story, everybody will agree with her. I'm like, that's not how that works.
No, it's not. But you got to remember, it's a television show.
Yeah. I have to say, I was curious what your opinion on this. Doesn't it feel increasingly selfish that Supergirl doesn't tell Lena her secret? Especially after this one. I couldn't help but feel that during that scene, like, dude, she is pouring her guts out to you. And you're just like, yeah, there's nothing important I'm withholding from you.
Yeah, but I don't know. Given your secret identity to Lena when she's been... I don't know. I still don't know whether Lena's going to stay good or not. You know what I mean?
No, I know. I don't know if it's necessarily the right decision, but it's certainly... Like, Kara has dug herself so deeply into that hole. There's just no way that ends well.
Yeah, I know. So, the thing with Lena is, I don't know if they plan on taking her full villain or not.
You know, I was so convinced for multiple seasons that they would. And this season, I think, has kind of been the season where I'm like, I don't think they are. I don't know. Unless it happens at the end of this season, I feel like she's just not going to be a villain.
Yeah. She does some villainous things sometimes, but they planted the seed, and it could go either way, whatever they decide to do. But a lot of this season, though, she's kind of been redeeming herself, so I don't know what they're doing, honestly.
It just feels increasingly like she's just a member of the team.
Yeah.
And she's just like, she'll always just be kind of like morally gray, but a morally gray member of the team, which is fine. I just never where I thought that story was going.
Yeah. And that could be, or they could be like, man, let's start redeeming her a little bit, and then we'll pull the rug from out under them. Then we might get a total surprise.
But, like, what more could they possibly do? To that, like, she's been broken down so thoroughly. I don't know. Like, it would require Supergirl to, like, rip the heart out of Lex.
Yeah, I don't know.
Even then, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just trying to think of... Things that I would have thought would have been the thing that caused her to snap have not caused her to snap, which is fine. I am enjoying the story that they're telling with her, but like, it also leads to the question of like, what else could they do that would cause that?
The only thing I can think of is her finding out Kara's secret identity.
But that has to be paired with something else, though. You know what I mean? I could certainly see her get incredibly pissed off at her about it.
Yeah.
But I think it's got to be paired. I think it's got to be paired with Lex or her mom's death.
You think so?
I think it's got to be those two things, and that Supergirl is somehow involved in that. And I wouldn't be shocked if this is something that happens. But I think one of those two has to die in relation to Supergirl, and then Lena at the same time also finds out who Supergirl is. And that would be... I think that's the thing that would set it off.
Okay. Well, we'll see if they...
I don't know that we'll see that, though.
I don't think we will see that. That's the thing. I mean, it's possible with Lex, but because we're only getting one more story with him, but...
So dumb.
I know. I don't know what Warner Brothers get up their butt, but...
I just don't understand. Those were good episodes. I mean, I would imagine that the viewer count of those were higher. I have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure they were.
I'm sure they were, probably were too. Not only did you have John Cryer on, he was Lex Luthor, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, well, this... We also had Brainy, Lena, and Alex working on James, whose PTSD is being amplified by the drug that's in his system. Lena's frustrated because she can't get the tech... She can't get the tech that she's scavenged from Lex's prison cell to work, and so Brainy proposes entering Jane's memory to find the root of his trauma, and it all goes back to his father's funeral. I found this very fascinating, this little history we had and how it tied up the brother and sister's relationship and stuff. I just found that little story intriguing.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a great little self-contained story. I hope James doesn't have powers permanently, just because effectively he seems to, based on what we saw with Lex, what Lex had, and then what the powers that James has demonstrated, he's basically would just be Superman.
Yeah, that's
and
what
we already have Supergirl, and we also have Superman himself, and we have Russian Supergirl, and we have apparently Superman Lex. I'm okay with it for the remainder of the season, but I kind of don't want superpowered James
after the season. Me either.
Yeah, I don't know if that's just me, but like, if you're gonna give me a, if you're gonna have a Superman, I'd rather it be Superman, not James Olsen. He was fine as Guardian. I really liked him as Guardian.
Yeah, he was fine as Guardian, but I don't want him to have Superman's powers either. If he was gonna have powers, something different.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Or like, I know it's silly, but you could do some. They reference Silver Age stuff all the time. I can't believe they haven't gone with some of the more ridiculous things that James had in terms of powers. Turn him into a giant turtle.
That'd be funny. Now, I wanted to ask you, did it feel like they were trying to get Alex and James's sister into a relationship? It seemed like they had some sort of moment there for a little bit.
Maybe.
So,
possible.
I didn't know. I was, you know, because we really haven't really needed her on the show. I was like, but I saw that moment. I'm like, are they trying to get them together?
I gotta say, she does feel
extra.
She's fine. She's a fine character. I don't mind her, but she is taking up screen time that I feel like wasn't necessary to give a different character.
Yeah, I mean, she's not really doing anything, doing much. Yeah. I mean, it worked. She worked really well in this story because the flashback to their father's funeral. But
I think it'd have been just as fine with outer though too. You know, like she was good. Again, she was good in this story. But I think you could have told just as emotionally powerful story without her.
Yeah, I agree with you. This episode concludes with John in his Martian form on Taz, where he deposits his ancestor's memory and the spear for safekeeping. And then we see that huge Mirren face appear in the sand and tells him to go home to his family. So that's kind of wrapping up that storyline. And I'm ready.
It definitely fell out of the blue. Like it makes. I understand that that was the next step for his mission, but it felt like they threw that in there to be like, by the way, in case you forgot, this is what he's been doing the last couple episodes.
I'm ready for him to come back and start being Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, I liked seeing this. I have to say, I can't complain that we got to see the scene, but you could have. I'm actually honestly surprised, given how frequently they avoid doing anything with Martian Manhunter, that they actually chose to show that scene and not just tell us that it happened later.
Well, maybe it's because of the fact they haven't had to do any Supergirl special effects scenes. Hey, we can give one to John. Of course, we did have the one with Dreamer earlier.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it feels like they bend over backwards to figure out ways to have him not be Martian Manhunter.
It does. But yeah, I like that. I like having that scene in there too. And I'm hoping we get back to have him get back joining the team and doing more Martian Manhunter things.
Yeah, now that he finally accepts the fact that he's Martian Manhunter again.
Yeah.
I'm also curious to see. Both of us were pretty sure that Manchester Black isn't dead.
Yeah,
we haven't really gotten any payoff with that yet.
No, we haven't. Maybe we will when John gets back to Earth. Who knows?
I don't know. I almost wonder if that's a future season threat.
That could be.
There aren't that many episodes left.
Yeah, and I have no... If that's a future thing that happens next season, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with you.
All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Arrow Season 7, Episode 20, Confessions. So, this episode opens up with a pair of dead bodies. Two Star City Metro Station guards who were beaten to death. And we see Oliver being questioned by Dinah and Sergeant Bingsley, who, of course, is very biased against Team Arrow. So, this was a very interesting episode, I thought, on how it played out. What was your thoughts?
I like the conceit of the episode. I feel like it needed... I would have liked a little bit more setup to it. It felt like we got thrown in a little too abruptly, and it took me a while to kind of get my bearings as to what was going on. I don't know if you felt that way.
Yeah, I did.
Initially, I would have liked maybe just like 5 minutes at the beginning or something that would have like really given you like, I don't need the twist of what actually happened. I like that that got saved, but something to give a better like, this is the lead up to what is going to be, this episode is going to be. But the going through the interviews and getting everybody's story and slowly piecing together what happened was really cool. My only minor gripe was that we've kind of seen this story though by the end. That was the only thing I kind of felt was like, oh, like when we got the payoff at the end that it was Roy, I was like, we've seen that. I don't know. I felt a little disappointed. I don't know. I know it makes the most sense that it was him, but it was also like we've seen him lose control and murder somebody that he didn't mean to.
Yeah. The other thing is, I'm not sure what the point of the story was, unless it was just so Omega would have something to...
That's what it seemed like it was, and it seemed like there was a better way to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
I would have preferred it to... I almost would have liked it to be that Arrow legitimately didn't know how they died. Like, Team Arrow didn't know, and you find out at the end that it was Amiko, and she set it up to make it look like it was one of them. I know you would have had... I understand you would have had to have changed the way the story worked a little bit, but that I would have liked better, because you kind of get that mastermind plan from Amiko that we've seen her enact in other areas throughout the season, and you would have gotten that snapshot here. This seemed like she... The thing I didn't like is it made her victory feel almost cheap, because she basically lucked into it.
Yeah.
She could not possibly have planned for Roy to come back, first off, and then to lose control because he died and went into a Lazarus pit and murdered someone. She didn't plan for that. She stumbled into that. So, I don't know. I would have... like I said, I liked the episode as an idea, and I liked the way that they did it, but the conclusion for me was the most disappointing part, because we've seen that storyline with Roy, and I really need another version of it. And then it also, to me, it kind of cheapened what Amiko was doing.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about this episode?
Again, that was a minor gripe. Again, I did enjoy this episode, and I am very excited to see the conclusion to this season, just because they've built up... I'm still not completely sold on Amiko as the villain of the season. I have accepted that she is. I still kind of wish that she wasn't, but I am very excited to see how this season concludes.
I do too. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Legends Tomorrow, Season 4, Episode 13, Egg MacGuffin. This episode pretty much picks off where we left off last week. Neron has possessed Ray, Nora's left in a coma, and Constantine is looking for a way to cure her. So we see Ray trying to fight off Neron's possession with limited effectiveness. He basically spends the whole episode fighting for control of his body. As Neron tries to kill everyone Ray comes into contact with. And then we see Ray finally give in to Neron to save Nate's life. Which, I kind of had a big problem with this scene. Because Nate can literally change his skin to metal, right? Neron shouldn't have been to beat him up as much as he did, and Nate only turned to metal for mere seconds. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
It was weird, because when he did turn to metal, it felt like it was the showrunners being like, oh, we need to make sure that he does that, because that will be the plot hole that people will poke in this scene. It's like, why didn't he turn into metal? So they had him do it briefly, but then he snaps right back out of it. I'm assuming they're insinuating the force of the blow made him lose control and turn back into Nate. But he still should have been metal well before that.
Yes, I had a big problem with that.
It felt like it was a combination of you needed that to happen for the scene, but also, I'm not going to lie, it frequently feels like he doesn't turn to metal because they don't want to animate him turning into metal.
I know.
Him and Martian are way more, but him also, it drives me nuts. Because why would you not constantly use that power?
I know. That is a great power. And my beef with it, instead of beating him up, use electricity on him. That would zap him back out of his metal.
Yeah, that was... I agree. Because the whole time I was like, why isn't he turning into metal? And then he briefly did. And I was like, you guys only did that so that you could... In your minds, I wouldn't question this scene. But I'm still questioning the scene.
Yes, that's how I would have changed it. using some sort of electricity would have zapped him back out of his metal form, and that would have made tons more sense than what they did.
Yeah, but then you couldn't have had Zari kissing around his wounds, though, so, you know, I mean.
Which was directly taken from Indiana Jones. So, which was funny because since we're talking about that, we see Saracen, Zari, and Nate on a mission to find a magical anomaly and develop their relationship, pretending to be Indiana Jones and Marion Ravenwood at a club for adventurers in 1933. They find a golden egg that was discovered in the Arctic, and naturally, they get attacked by Nazis, because that's what happens in Indiana Jones, too. And we actually get to see a little superpowers as the two of them fight and eventually kiss. Then at the end of the episode, we find out that the egg is a dragon. Now, I gotta tell you, Cletus, I thought this was a missed opportunity, because how awesome would it have been if that egg had been Plastic Man instead of a dragon?
I mean, I agree, but the dragon makes way more sense for the story.
I know it does, but that would have been so cool. Missed opportunity.
I also, unfortunately, on some level, I think it would cause a lot of confusion for people that don't read the comics, because I don't know. I assume most people who watch Legends also watch The Flash. Not necessarily all, but I would assume a heavy crossover. And we've talked about this in the past. Elongated Man is Plastic Man.
Yeah, he
is. The Ralph on the TV show, who I love, is not Elongated Man, really. He's Plastic Man. So I don't know. Like, if you were to do Plastic Man in that universe, I'd be thrilled. But you basically would just have a second Ralph.
Yeah, that is true. That's true. Well, they could have had it been Ralph. That would have been hilarious. What are you doing here?
Hey, I'd have been all for it. That'd have been hilarious.
It would have been hilarious. They'd have been like, Ralph, what are you doing here? How'd you get to be an egg? Man, you could have a whole
funny
story.
An egg in 1930.
I know. That would be freaking hilarious. The other thing I thought was funny in this episode is when Charlie poses as Rebecca Silver for Mick so they can get that $20,000 for going to that convention. But of course, Mona shows up and then...
Ruins it.
But, you know, Mick still gets the recognition he deserves. Nobody cares.
Yeah, but, like, it was, I don't know. I was like, when she ran in, I was like, of course it's you. Of course you would be the killjoy for everybody here.
I don't know. I still thought it was fun.
I was happy for Heatwave to get the recognition. And to be appreciated. That part was cool, but...
That was cool. I mean, we've seen his character come a long way.
It did not ingratiate me to Mona at all, though.
Of course it didn't. Another great episode of Legends, and this season feels to me like it's the best of all the seasons so far.
We'll see. If it doesn't end with a giant Bebo fight, though, I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure we'll have something just as fun. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 5, Episode 20, Gone Rogue. So, after finding out that Nora has returned to 2019, Team Flash uses every piece of tech to find her, which doesn't work out because Nora has abandoned the Speed Force in favor of Thawne's negative Speed Force. Acting on Thawne's advice, Nora plans on breaking into McCullough Technologies to steal tech. However, the building has a super metahuman power dampener that prevents her from pulling off the heist on her own, so Nora decides to recruit some B-list villains to help her. Weather Witch, Queen Bee, and Ragdoll. Ragdoll, who I still find very creepy. I don't care he was on a team in being a team player, he was still freaking creepy in this.
Did you note that they couldn't even commit to, although I'm not disappointed about it, they couldn't even commit to the Young Rogues? Because they had Weather Witch come in, and she was like, yeah, she had this ridiculous notion we'd be like the Young Rogues or something like that. And I was like,
yeah.
You guys couldn't even commit to that. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not terribly disappointed that the Young Rogues didn't happen, because I was pretty pissed that they were going to do that and not the regular Rogues. But I was also salty when at one point Barry describes them as Rogues, and I'm like, you've never fought the Rogues. At no point have they ever teamed up more than two of them at a time. Like one time or two, maybe twice, there was three of them. That doesn't count.
I knew you were going to rant about the Rogues tonight. I knew it. I knew it was coming. Man, I should have placed a bet on it. All right. Well, we see the Young Rogues, and I'm using air quotes there, take Cisco and Sherlock hostage. And they want Cisco to reprogram the Meditech phone so they can use it. And Cisco points out that he was in this exact same situation 5 years ago and calls them the Rogues cover band.
There was no Rogues. There was no Rogue team.
But I found it funny that because Cisco's like, is that crazy B-girl? Hey, girl, what's going on? Like, I was like, hey, we're getting some of the old Cisco back there. But what was kind of creepy was, and I don't know where she even learned it, but Nora does the old reverse flash hand signature move, like she was gonna stick a hand in his heart, kind of thing.
Yeah, that I was kind of totally. I understand why Cisco, of all people, would be intimidated by that. I get that.
But how did Nora even know about it?
I could see her learning about that.
It was a little too dark. I thought it was a little too dark for Nora.
Well, especially because she's never actually going down that road.
Yeah.
That was the thing I don't understand. At that point, it was like, I understand why Cisco would be intimidated, but also call her bluff, man. She's not going to shove her arm through you.
Yeah. So after his encounter with Nora, Barry is convinced that she is irredeemable, corrupted by Thawne, and is determined to bring her in. However, Iris, who has been busy piecing together Nora's plan with Cecile, figures out that she's trying to steal some Meditech to defeat Cicada. Cicada Part 2! And argues that maybe they should trust her. Now, we talked after the show last week about this a little bit. And you were talking about how you thought the show was making it look like that Nora or everybody was honky-dory with Thawne following her. You know what I mean.
By the end of the episode, the entire team has bought into what is effectively Thawne's plan. I don't understand that. I don't understand how they're all just like, oh, because it's Nora, it must work.
Yeah, but I noticed that both Joe and Barry said they don't trust Thawne, but everybody's willing to go along with Thawne's plan. But it's Thawne.
That's trusting Thawne. That's the thing. That's why I didn't understand. Like, yeah, you're right. Both Joe and Barry are like, well, I don't trust Thawne, but I trust you. It's not her plan. You're not trusting Nora. You're trusting Thawne.
I know. They should be weary of his plan. It's going to benefit him somehow. I still don't understand what his plan is, but I know it's going to come to fruition soon. And I'm very excited for the season finale.
If I didn't know that the premise for the season finale was in some way a fight between Barry and Reverse Flash, I would assume that they wouldn't do it. Like everything about the past three episodes or so has seemed to be like, no, actually, Thawne's not being a bad guy. Like, anytime Barry's like, no, it's Thawne, he's bad, every other member of the team basically chastises him. Like, no, Barry, it's your daughter, you should trust her. Like, how dare you possibly think the worst villain we've ever fought could possibly be doing something evil again, you monster? Obviously you should trust your daughter who doesn't know what she's doing.
Yeah, I'm wondering how this plan's going to benefit Thawne, and I still think Thawne is behind Cicada Part 2 coming back. So
I agree, and I don't understand. I don't understand what the show is. Like I said, if I didn't know that Thawne is, and on some way, I'm assuming, unless they're lying, in the description of the season and they're not actually going to fight, which is possible. Everything about the show makes it seem like they're not going to fight, which would be even more disappointing.
Yeah, that would be very disappointing. I would be very disappointed if we don't have a Barry versus Thawne episode at the end of the season.
But at the same time, if it does end with that fight, A, awesome, great. I am on board with that. But B, how could you, at the conclusion of that fight, look at that and go, yeah, that was Thawne's fault. Definitely not my own. I definitely didn't walk straight into that trap.
Yeah. I don't know. I just hope we have a good ending to this season, especially with the lackluster that Cicada's been for the last half of the season.
Don't you feel like Cicada's a distraction? Like, this episode, again, the brief times that she pops up, I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Go back to the other story. Like, all of this other stuff is I'm far, far more interested in.
Yeah.
They're not even – the problem is now – she's such a non-factor that when she goes on, there's not enough to be, in my opinion, to be interested in. It's really just like, oh, by the way, Cicada's still out there.
Yeah.
They're not doing enough. Like, if you're going to keep her around, you've got to, like, I think you've got to commit more screen time to the villain.
The thing that has Team Flash worried now is she's got Cisco's metahuman cure, and now she's going to use it to kill every metahuman. Now she's becoming a threat again. But I'm still more interested in the Thawne, what Thawne's up to.
That's the thing. Like, that's just – she. So great. Now she's got the doomsday threat, and we're at the end of the season. I've never seen that before. It doesn't make me any more intrigued. Yes, absolutely, 100%. The threat level has risen significantly. The urgency to stop her is there. I get that. But I also that we've
done this before.
This story, we've done this song and dance a number of times, and not just on the Flash. Arrow, it got so cliche they even referenced it within the show. I mean, like, oh, yeah. The city's in crisis, must be May. You know what I mean? So, like, Flash hasn't seemed to have figured that out yet. Arrow, I thought, has done a great job of getting away from that and making the conclusions something else.
Yeah, yes, they have. I guess. Flash needs some new blood in the writer's room.
Yeah, yes.
But I am looking forward to the season finale coming up soon. I want to see Barry versus Thawne. And if we don't get that, I am going to be sorely disappointed.
Well, you know what season didn't have the entire city is doomed plot? Season 1. The best season. With Reverse Flash.
Yeah.
It ultimately is just a singular conflict between Barry and Eobard Thawne, and ultimately the rest of Team Flash, particularly Eddie. But everyone since then has had some mega complex villain plot that they have to stop. It's like they wrote a great season. They're like, what if we just didn't do that again?
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
It would be. I don't think it's necessary for it to be Thawne, though. Like, Thawne is clearly the best villain they have, but you could do that. Like, the Thinker, I still think they really dropped the ball on what his plan was ultimately. I thought it was kind of just generic by the end. But you could, like, the Thinker, I think, could have had something far more interesting than what they did. Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Doom Patrol, Season 1, Episode 12, Cyborg Patrol. So at the end of last episode, Cyborg had been captured by the Bureau of Normalcy and was currently being held at the Ant Farm. And it's up to the Doom Patrol and Silas Stone to break him out. Okay, Cletus, I gotta admit, the writers had me fooled when Silas betrayed the team. Because I was like, you son of a... And, you know, offering the team in exchange for him to see his son, and he didn't even ask for his freedom. I was very happy when they did the little flashback and we saw, oh, that was the plan the whole time. And Rita coming out from inside a cliff was freaking genius. I thought it was hilarious. And he's blaming the smell on the rat that had been inside him. Man, what a great episode of Doom Patrol.
Can I just say that the Butts on the Loose might be the funniest thing I've seen on this show that has had just a number of absolutely hilarious moments.
Oh, yes. I love that scene. That was freaking hilarious.
Butts are loose. The butts are loose.
Oh, man. Hilarious. I got to tell you, though, the ending was brutal. Mr. Nobody showing up and announcing that he had manipulated Cyborg into killing his father? That was just brutal.
That was brutal.
Oh, man.
It's really setting up. We're pretty close to the end of the season. And so I thought it appropriately raised the stakes. But yeah, that was pretty heartbreaking for Cyborg.
Yeah, it was. Just thinking that he, you know, he's been controlling the video that's been coming up and messing with him. Man. The show continues to be outstanding.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
So I've talked a lot. I mentioned several times when we talked about Doom Patrol that is pulling heavily from Grant Morrison's run. I mean, the show itself even references that in the first episode. If this show is something that you're really enjoying and you haven't read Doom Patrol comics before, I know I've recommended the modern one by Gerard Way, but the Doom Patrol book by Grant Morrison, it's been recently recollected as a book. Doom Patrol Book 1 is the volume that it's called right now. Technically, it's actually starting at issue number 19, if you're looking for it in terms of issue numbers. Because it started halfway through a publishing run for that title. It's got really good stuff. Like, that's where Beard Hunter came from. You know, it's got Robot Man in it. Negative Man is in it. The Chief. It's good stuff.
All right. And we'll have a link for that in our show notes. For my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Caster Quest, which is a podcast on the ESO Network. I've been listening to their Game of Thrones episodes because they've been talking about this last season of Game of Thrones, and they're pretty hilarious. They give a scene by scene description of the whole episode, and some of their commentary is hilarious too. So I've been enjoying their reviews on the episode. So I just wanted to give them a quick shout out. All right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can read our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we're going to have Super Sons, Batman, The Year of the Villain, Justice League, The Green Lantern, and Young Justice, and, of course, our DC television shows. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.